And coming back here on In Focus News Radio KMAN, our next segment is a pre-recorded segment. So just a reminder, there will be no phone calls here during this next segment with Crystal Pratt from Ascension via Christie Hospital. We are joined here on News Radio KMAN today by Crystal Pratt. She is a forensic nurse specialist out of Ascension via Christie Hospital. Crystal, good to talk to you here today.
Yeah, thank you for having me, Brandon.
You bet. We are talking today about some domestic violence and particularly some changes that are happening at the hospital with forensic nursing and being a forensic nurse specialist. I guess, first of all, tell me a little bit about what you do at the hospital.
Absolutely. So kind of what we do is we see a variety of patients ranging from sexual assaults to interpersonal violence, domestic violence, and eventually we're also going to see pediatric patients. So kind of what we do is when people come in and they've been a victim or survivor of a sexual assault, we kind of help them through the process. We'll go through talking about the history of the event that occurred, talk to them about medical, do a full head-to-toe assessment. We'll help with collection of evidence. And then we'll also start that ball rolling on whether they're going to report or not report. Some people don't realize that there's options with that. We work really closely with the community on different resources, and that's one of our biggest goals, is to get them hooked up with resources within the community of what happens after that sexual assault, that interpersonal violence, that domestic violence. That's not something that they just come in one-stop shop. It's a continuation of what's going to be the best care plan for them going forward.
I imagine when you get victims of that at the hospital, you want to be kind of cautious of how you approach that. Maybe there's a series of questions you want to follow here, because not everyone wants to open up about these kind of situations.
Absolutely, and that's very true. One of the biggest things that we're kind of working on as a community right now is just to start the conversation, talking about what is consent, talking about sexual assaults, talking about domestic violence. Those conversations are very typically taboo. I think that if we made those more normal, just like if you have your foot broken, you go get an x-ray. What happens when you have a sexual assault? What happens when you have a domestic violence? If we make that conversation part of a normal conversation, I think we're going to see people feel more open to have these conversations, and then we can kind of really change the narrative within our community. We do a lot of education within our team to develop what does it look like to be trauma-informed and how to approach these patients so that we're not making them feel judged. We're not doing any victim blaming. There's a lot of education that goes into that to ask questions appropriately to kind of get them to trust you with their story. It takes time, you know, and in nursing, in the medical field, sometimes time is of an essence, so you don't always have the time. And that's one reason that Ascension really wanted to kind of develop this forensic nursing department, was because we can kind of come in and specialize in that and take time with these patients and really see what resources they need.
Okay. Well, the reason we're talking about this, October is Domestic Violence Prevention Month, and so this is a good way to kind of relate that here. Now, you've had a program before. What's different about, I guess, the old program compared to the new?
So originally, the program that I was started or part of, I didn't start, part of was the Sexual Assault Nurse Examiner Program. It was called SANE. They focus primarily on sexual assault, and that would be for adults and anyone over 14. When I first took the full-time position at Ascension in April, I kind of really reached out to the community to see kind of what do we need here? What are our needs? And looking at other programs and how their success has been, they've been an all-encompass program, which includes adding in that interpersonal violence, domestic violence, elderly abuse, and then looking at pediatric cases as well. So just trying to see there's a greater need outside of sexual assaults. There's also all these other statistics that we need to have more options for them to have someone to help them.
All right. You know, a lot of us are not keen to see, you know, what happens behind the scenes here. You get different patients of all walks of life that come in to the hospital, I'm sure. What do you guys typically see on a monthly basis here in Manhattan?
Right now, I would say our numbers are not an accurate depiction of what we actually see. I know working with K-State, they see survivors there. They don't typically come in and see us at the hospital. There's a variety of reasons for that. The crisis center also typically sees a variety of people that we may not see at the hospital. So our numbers are pretty low now. I think that once we get information out there about what we do and our resources and how we can help people, I think that eventually our numbers are going to really reflect what's happening within our community. I think COVID also changed a little bit of that. COVID made people reluctant to go to the hospital as a whole. Not that domestic violence or sexual assaults or any of that wasn't happening. It's just that people feared for their life of COVID, so they just stayed at home and kind of bared with it. I think now that we're kind of getting normal-ish, back to normal, I think that we're going to see our cases kind of go back to being higher. And then adding in those other features with the interpersonal violence, domestic violence, I think we're going to see a whole new number because we haven't ever counted those numbers before. I know working in the ER previously, we would have people come in just for abdominal pain, and then you would uncover that they are also part of domestic violence. So it's something that if you carry the conversation the right way, you're going to be able to help a lot of people, even if it's just planting that seed for them.
All right. Again, we're talking with Crystal Pratt, forensic nurse specialist here in at Ascension Via Christi in Manhattan. Is Ascension doing anything here this month kind of tied into this whole domestic violence prevention?
Yeah, we wanted to really just work within our own company and kind of say, let's start a conversation. We have a purple table that's going to be moved throughout the hospital that just has some local statistics, that has information about a lethality assessment that people can take and do at home by themselves. A lethality assessment kind of lets you really see on a scoring level kind of where you're at close to potentially being killed. I know a lot of police departments use lethality assessments as well, but they're a great tool just to kind of paint that picture for someone who might not realize that a strangulation puts you at a higher percent of the next time being death. So we also have resources as far as like the crisis center, the care office, things like that within our poster. Everyone's going to hopefully be wearing purple Mondays and Fridays just to start that conversation. And then also you can paint your ring fingernail purple just so people will say, oh, why is your ring fingernail purple and not any other colors? And you can kind of have a conversation with that.
Okay, very good. Well, I'm curious, does the hospital have a working partnership with the police department here locally, or maybe the K-State Police Department as well?
We're working really closely trying to, as a community, develop what we call as a SART. It's a sexual assault response team. And working with that, we're trying to get, K-State already has one in place, but we're trying to get one for the community members as well. So we're trying to do an all-around community resources so we can each lean on each other and know what our role is for each of these survivors. I've worked with RCPD a few times. We're developing what our education looks like. How can we work best together? K-State, we have a meeting set up. So yeah, we try to build that relationship and partnership with all those.
All right. So somebody's listening to this program here today, and they hear about what you guys are doing at the hospital. And let's say maybe they're a victim. What is the first step that you suggest for them to take?
I think the first step is just kind of starting that conversation and coming into our facility and just being able to talk with one of us to see what options there are. With sexual assaults, there is a 5-day time frame that we, after 5 days, where we can't really collect a lot of evidence, but we can still have a conversation with them. We can still give them resources. It doesn't mean if you come in 2 weeks later, it's not worth having a conversation. There are so many good resources within our community that might be beneficial for them. The care office, the crisis center, there's just so many good programs out there that help people after they've had such a traumatic event happen to them.
In a lot of these cases, I imagine it's not just a one-time deal. This is, I think studies have found that these are usually repeat offenders.
Oh, absolutely. If you ever have a chance to kind of research a lot of it, especially with domestic violence tends to be one of those things that's not just scary for that survivor or that victim, but it's also scary for the police department because they're at a higher rate for them for that situation to escalate and a police officer to be caught in a bad predicament because of those instances. So it's just as vital for us as medical staff as it is for the police department and the community just to be educated on the resources and what that looks like. I think a lot of times the reason why we have victim blaming is because it makes us feel safe. You know, oh, that person got that, happened to them because they were wearing that. Oh, they drank too much. That's why. That's a comfort for us. It's not a reality. If we could just open that conversation and say, hey, this is here, it is happening, it's going to make a difference, because then we can have that dialogue and not make it taboo and make people feel comfortable to say, this is what's happening.
And another thing here is with that, I think we have a tendency to have a perception of who the victim is. And it's not the what we traditionally think of. I mean, it could be women, it could be men, it could be someone as old as 60, 70, 80 years old, or it could be a teenager.
Absolutely. There's a variety of that. You think about it, like a lot of people think of that stranger danger. I mean, I know when I was a kid, they always talked to me about stranger danger. If you look at statistics, though, you're more likely to be sold into like human trafficking by a family member, by someone you know, than it is a stranger. Same things with domestic violence or interpersonal violence. It's people that are high up there in like, you know, politicians. It's people that have nice good jobs, 9-to-5s, that could be doing that. It's not the guy that has the white van who's coming around to get candy to children. You just have to really, really educate yourself and not turn a blind eye to it and act like it isn't happening. That's the biggest message that I hope that we can get in our community. If we all work together, it'll help a lot better for these survivors and for our community as a whole.
All right. Is there anything else I haven't asked that you want to make sure to get out there?
I just think my biggest thing, like I've said probably 100 times already, is just start that conversation. I have a blended family of 6 boys, and we talk about consent. We talk about boundaries. We talk about just understanding what we can do different in the world. And my oldest is 16, my youngest is 3, and it's never too early to start that conversation. We live in a society that teaches people how not to get raped. Why don't we change that to how not to rape? And that way we're not always victim blaming people. We're just kind of changing that narrative a little bit.
All right. Yeah, good conversations to have, and a conversation that needs to continue in our community. Again, Crystal Pratt here, forensic nurse specialist at Ascension Via Christi. If anybody wants to get a hold of you out there, how can they get in touch?
I knew you were going to ask that, and I should have my number memorized, but I don't. I would say that you can always call the operator at Ascension Via Christi. We are not – I work full-time, but I'm not always in the office because we typically take call so that we are able to help victims at different points in the night. So I'm not always there Monday through Friday, but you're more than welcome to leave a message, and then we can call you back. If it's something that you're okay with us, make sure you let us know, we can leave a message. Typically, with certain survivors, we will not call back if it's going to put them at risk.
Okay, very good. Well, Crystal, thanks for coming on. Good information today, and we hope you have a great rest of your week.
All right, thank you so much.
And by the way, that phone number there, if you want to get a hold of them at Ascension Via Christi, her phone number is 785-323-6880. Again, that's 785-323-6880. A lot of good information from Crystal Pratt there at Ascension Via Christi. Again, she's a forensic nurse, and a good topic here for the show. Thank you also to our guests from the K-State Homecoming Committee that came out here and talked about that. That's going to be a lot of fun. And the big thing there, the 5K on the 24th, goes to support Pawnee Mental Health Services, and there's information. You can learn more about that on the K-State Homecoming website. Pretty much all you got to do is just Google K-State Homecoming. It'll come right up. The theme again this year, Lights, Camera, Cats for Homecoming 2021, and then the football game on the 24th. Or check that with the 30th with TCU. Also, thank you to Dr. Bob Larson from the K-State College of Veterinary Medicine. If you miss any information on that, good segment in segment one talking about the new hotline for diagnosing toxic animal emergencies. That's part of a USDA grant that the college applied for and received, and that is taking shape now. We also talked about some weaning of calves and what to do here this time of year. So some good information here on In Focus today, and we'll appreciate everyone for listening. Tomorrow, Riley County Commission Chair John Ford will join us for the hour. We got a lot going on in Riley County. We'll be talking with him. He'll be joining us in studio rest of the week, we've got Pott County Schools and MATC Wednesday, Fort Riley, the Manhattan Housing Authority on Thursday, and we have the Extension, Senior Center, and Meadowlark coming in on Friday to talk about their Walk to End Alzheimer's event.
Coming up in just a few minutes, the GMCF show, as I'll sit in for Dave this morning and get you up to date on some topics related to the Greater Manhattan Community Foundation. Rain has moved out of the area. Clouds will be doing so as well as the day wears on. Look for a high later today of 75.